And now, it's time to sit back and enjoy the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Broadcast.
Am I blue?
The prequel trilogy is over, and millions of fans are left without Star Wars. Enter a brave group of Jedi, led by Dave Filoni, who brought tales of the Jedi, clone armies, and Mandalorians to Cartoon Network, thus keeping hope alive in the galaxy. Welcome to J-Guys and Jedi!
Hi everyone, welcome to a brand new episode of J-Guys and Jedi, a weekly podcast covering every episode of Star Wars The Clone Wars. In this episode, Padme and Jar Jar are captured while looking for a new secret bioweapons lab. Anakin, Ahsoka, and Obi-Wan race to save their friends. There will be... more Jar Jar, little rogue bots scurrying around with bombs, and a crazy Frankenstein doctor! Yes! We're talking about the blue shadow virus this week. How you doing, Chris?
Yeah.
Oh my god, I love Indy. How you doing?
Good. It's weird. It's
Okay then.
Morning again. It's just strange.
I know, though I do kind of like recording so earlier in the day because I get to like look at the clouds as they pass.
The sun's actually... coming in through the window.
I know. I get to watch the clouds and watch my cats run around the yard, so.
Nice.
So it's good. I like it. I like it a lot, so. You have a good week?
It was a long week. I've been working.
I feel you
I've
on that
working
one.
Working a lot lately, and I'm looking forward to garage sale season's coming, so I'm going to cut back my work schedule. I'm really looking forward to that.
Yeah, and you can also make more podcasts for your garage sale podcast.
Yeah.
And I didn't
fill
set
in
up
all that spare time with podcasting. That's basically what I'm doing lately. Is going to work and coming back and editing or recording podcasts. So. Nothing wrong with that.
No, you just need a break.
Someday I'll sleep and eat.
I know that feeling. I've been officially working four jobs now for 2.5-3 weeks now.
Wow.
And I'm tired. So
that'll keep you
it's
busy.
A thing. Yeah, this is one of my jobs, so this is one of the ones I love. So podcasting is a job to me. But it's a what?
It just sounds bad. It's a job to me.
No, but it's a fun job. So, I like doing it. And it gets my name out there so I can better my career and promote, you know, what the fangirl and, like, my other things that I do.
And stuffs your bank account full of money.
Not so much, but I hope we'll get there one day.
Someday.
Hopefully. So if you want to help us get there one day, you know, check out our Amazon link on the website.
Any you know, multimillionaires out there who are, like, wondering where to throw $1 million... Throw it at us.
You know what? I might actually support Donald Trump for a hot minute if he threw $1 million at us. I might actually do that.
I hope.
Still wouldn't vote for him, but I would give him a nice thumbs up. So, you want to know something cool, Chris?
Sure.
We didn't get a new review, but I noticed on iTunes that we have five-star ratings.
Ooh.
I know, 3 reviews and 5 5-star ratings.
Excellent. Well, that's hopefully...
So thank you.
Thank
you the other 4 people who did that, because I know I rated us.
Hopefully that's getting our visibility out there.
Yes.
I haven't done any research. I'm going to do some research one of these days and see what other Clone Wars podcasts are out there.
That'd be fun!
I haven't checked it out
yet.
We
can have a group episode.
I've been curious to see how other people are approaching this. There's gotta be dozens of them, you know?
There's gotta be more of us. We're out there. We're out there invisible.
Well, recently Scott Rifen has been, I keep wanting to say Growing Up Star Wars. My Star Wars Story podcast is up for an award in Star Wars Podcasts.
I saw that.
So I went over to vote for it.
A few times.
And it's like, pick up to 10 Star Wars podcasts, you know, that you want to vote for. And I'm just scrolling and scrolling and scrolling. And honestly, I'd only heard about, I could only vote for 3. And those were the 3 just that I've heard of or heard before, you know. And there were just hundreds of them. It was ridiculous. So
yeah,
And I don't know if they counted Clone Wars as Star Wars podcasts. I didn't even really pay attention.
I think it's just like anything that's in the realm of
Star Wars, yeah.
Because I know a fellow podcaster, Jonna Marie, who does Rebels Chat, and was up there for Rebels Chat, but she was also up there for Galactic Fashion, which is a podcast talking about fashion, like Star Wars fashion.
Oh, I just got a new Star Wars shirt the other day.
Yeah. Oh,
fancy. At JCPenney's, yeah.
Dude, Kohl's is putting out so much Star Wars stuff, but Kohl's is also going to be putting out a line of Captain America Civil War workout clothes, and I'm going to die because I want them so bad.
Our JCPenney was so sad. We were going in there, and we were going in there. Who I was going with was going to take some stuff back, and as we went in the door, I noticed two big stickers on the door, one saying, like, Star Wars Outpost and one saying Disney Outpost. And I'm like, all right, so this place has, it's saying we've got a Star Wars Outpost, a Disney Outpost in here. Got to go check out and see what the Star Wars merch is. So, you know, we do his business, and then we go and I ask the lady, you know, where's the Star Wars section? She's like, oh, I don't know, I'm probably here, and we had to walk around to finally find where all the Star Wars t-shirts and stuff were. Stuck in a little corner and all on sale, so just like I like it. So I got a nice old retro. There were lots of Star Wars 1977 retro-looking shirts that were really nice with the ringers, like three-quarter sleeves with the ringers on them about halfway up the sleeve. Really nice 70s style. Those were too expensive. Those I'll get in a garage sale. But I got a nice plain t-shirt. Looks like it's got some Al Williamson art on it of mostly from Star Wars and Empire. And I got a Popeye t-shirt for my buy a second one free. Get a second free.
Cool.
Seeing as how I look more and more like Popeye every year.
I don't think I buy any Star Wars clothes recently. I am looking desperately for the Grunkle Rex toy that came out for Rebels. I can't find it anywhere, and I've been looking desperately for it. And I just can't bring myself to buy it off of Amazon because I can't actually look at the quality and make sure the paint's right and everything.
You looked on eBay?
Well, I want to be able to, like, look at the paint and make sure there's no, like, mistakes on it and stuff like that. So I can't find it anywhere. And it's my white whale right now. I will find you, Grunkle Rex. I will. My white whale! Anyway, hey, we should talk about the blue shadow virus.
Yeah, luckily it's not the blue waffle virus. Everybody Google that. That's the first thing I thought when I saw it. I was just like, ooh.
I'm laughing.
I hope the clones don't get the blue waffle virus.
No, I'm laughing because the first time I was with my mother when she first heard about what the blue waffle virus was. And she was just like, what do you mean? Like, she thought, like, you know, blueberry waffles.
Yeah.
Nope. And so my stepdad is like, do you want to Google it? Because he knew what it was, and my mom didn't. She was like, yeah, let's Google it. Blue waffle virus. Ah!
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I just suddenly really miss my mom. Anyway, blue shadow virus. All right. Let me put down my cross stitching. I'm sorry. I'm trying to stab myself in the finger. All right. So, the Blue Shadow Virus is the 17th episode of Star Wars The Clone Wars, and it aired on February 13th, 2009. It was the first part of an hour-long special. It was written by Craig Titley and directed by Juan Carlo Volpe. Volpe, I hope it's Volpe. I'm sorry if I missaid that. And some extra information for you. In the script, the tactical droid was originally a medical droid. This is why C-3PO says to it, we want to hear all your tales of your medical heroics. Also in the original script, after Vindi's servant droid, LEP-86C8, took the bomb, it left and never to be seen again. Padme found the missing bomb in the greenhouse room, hidden for no apparent reason. The addition of the scampering droid with the bomb was made not only for story logic, but to add humor when it startles Padme.
I guess it does.
I can see that just being like, it took the bomb and it just walked in and dropped in the green room and left. Well, droids are dumb. It might have.
I mean, it's a possibility. It's realistic. It's just no fun.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's fun, the little, like, meh sound it makes. Meh.
I like the design of that droid.
I like the design of that droid, too. It's actually really cute. It's just cute enough, but it has, like, the implication of, like, devil horns to know that it's, like, evil. But it is a cute little thing. I like that they're, like, pear-shaped, so they kind of, like, wobble and they're bottom-heavy.
Yeah.
Just like how I am. I'm a pear-shaped.
Well, they're kind of like something that maybe would work in CG. And you couldn't build one of them to go, but it's not, and it works in, it's very cartoony and but Star Wars-y at the same time. This whole episode's very cartoony in a really good way.
Yeah, I mean I mentioned it later in my notes, but I do like the fact that it's a two-parter, because this one's okay, but it works better as a two-parter. Mm-hmm. So, but we're getting ahead of ourselves, because every time we do an episode, we say the episode words of wisdom in a sexy, terrible Yoda-verse voice, so...
I like that, the sexy, terrible Yoda-verse.
Yoda-verse.
The universe of bad Yoda quotes. And this one may be the best one of all, because it calls one of us out by name. Okay.
Oh.
Fear is a disease. Hope is its only cure. In bed.
Yeah, it does!
You're the only cure for fear, Hope.
Yeah, with my... lack of penis. I'll use my vag attack. It's super effective. Oh my gosh, I'm not awake yet. Let me take drink of this. I'm so not awake still. Anyway, kids, this is what happens when you work four jobs. You're really, really tired. So, all right, so act one.
Act one, I'm ready.
Now that we've been talking for 20 minutes. All right, so. Battle droids are spotted on the peaceful planet of Naboo. Fearing another invasion, Padme with C-3PO and Jar Jar Binks return to the planet to investigate. Captain Typho and Queen, I'm so about to butcher this name, Niutni? Queen Niutni? Greet them in the hangar. The Queen wants Padme to convince the Senate, the Jedi Council, or whoever's in charge of this terrible war, that they're being threatened. Padme knows that they will need more proof. The group start interrogating a tactical droid to get more information, and Padme wonders why a droid was found in the Padme wonders why a droid that was found in the grasslands has mud on it. They disable the droid's visuals so C-3PO can talk to it without giving away the humans. It mentions that there is a virus in a secret lab, but just as they're starting to get some answers, Jar Jar spots a tasty bug. His tongue gets stuck in a droid helmet, and panicking, he knocks over a series of shelves which land and destroy the tactical droid. But he says that the bug is only found in one place, the eastern swamplands on Naboo. They call up Yoda and Wet Blanket Windu for aid. Padme requests Anakin and Obi-Wan in the least subtle way possible, because she's not married to one of them, no siree, not at all. Padme leaves C-3PO with the Queen and the Captain to go find the secret lab with Jar Jar out in the grasslands. A Gungan herder named Peppy is tending to her animals. They drink from a river nearby, but suddenly start dying off.
Peppy.
I like Peppy.
I do too.
She's a good Gungan.
It's just good to see other Gungans besides Jar Jar, because they're articulate and, like, you know, they're not goofy. They're actual characters.
I think Jar Jar would be a lot more tolerable if she was like Peppy, because she still had her funny moments. You know, like when like the scope droid like rises up and she's like stuck on top of it, and she's just like meh. Like, she has her funny moments, but she's also, like, super capable.
Right, right. She's
I really like Peppy a lot.
I liked seeing Naboo again. I was like, okay, let's see how this translates, since we're familiar with Naboo from the movie, how it translates to the CGI and the cartoon, and it...
This is our first time seeing Naboo in the show,
isn't
it? Yeah.
And it worked really well. I mean... Naboo is almost all CGI back in episode one, too. So I wonder if they, like, pulled out digital models and stuff to set a lot of the stuff up, like the hangar room and the familiar locations.
And I think they had, like, a lot of nice callbacks, like Queen Amidala saying, like, while she requested Anakin, she brought up the fact that it's Obi-Wan that has good relations with the Gungans. So, like, those were some nice callbacks to episode one. One? Or was it two? When did they go see the Gungans?
Episode one. Yeah, episode one.
And I also always forget that the Gungans live on Naboo. I always forget that.
Sounded like Jar Jar had a cold.
It's that, yeah! I mean, the voice actor
isn't quite on it. He's got a little too much scratchiness to it. And Captain Typho looked like he had a... His eye patch looked like a really bad shiner. It looked neat in the movies. It was like, oh, cool, an eye patch would just stick over your eye. But in CG, it looked like his eye was just like swollen shut.
Yeah.
A little awkward.
Maybe if it was a different color, because it was kind of in the same tone as his skin color, yeah. So it kind of blended into it.
It did. It was just a little darker than his skin color, like a black eye would be, you know? And it sort of had these, not ridges, but sort of ripples in it that looked like, you know, just a shut eye. It was weird. It was distracting.
Maybe it wasn't Casual Friday and he couldn't wear, like, the polka dot spotted lime green one. Casual Friday, wear your favorite eye patch. Mine has Mickey Mouse on it.
It was funny because I had a little emotional up and down where I was like, ooh, Naboo, cool, we'll see. They'll probably have Jar Jar with them then. I was like, oh, yeah, they do.
Yeah, I remember this episode because, like, my problem is you don't really need Jar Jar at all in the episode.
Right.
Like, even in the next episode, just to get ahead to, like, next week's episode, I mean... Jar Jar is the one that almost kills Senator Amidala because he, like, trips and falls into her and knocks off her air supply and lets the blue shadow virus infect her. It's Jar Jar's fault. Like, he's not really needed because they could have figured out it was the Eastern Swamplands. They could have figured out that, like, what was going on. And he didn't do anything. Like, he really didn't do anything. It could have been, you know, Amidala all by herself.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I don't know. Jar Jar wasn't needed at
all. Yeah, but how are you going to go back to Naboo and not bring Jar Jar with you, you know? It's like...
Like, very easily. Just leave him on, like,
Tell me you went back to Naboo. I haven't seen my parents in 3 years.
It's okay. They don't want to see you. They're pretty happy that you live on Coruscant.
Probably true.
Though, I have to give you my Darth Jar Jar theory.
Okay.
So, Darth Jar Jar was effective in this episode because just as they're starting to get answers from the tactical droid, Darth Jar Jar purposely knocks over the shelves to destroy the droid to keep them from finding about the secret lab and the virus. The reason he did that because he wanted to give Vindi more time to set up the blue shadow virus and escape. Because even Vindi says later in the episode, oh, well, the Jedi got here faster than I thought they would. So he was trying to buy Vindi more time to get the virus out there. That's my Darth Jar Jar theory for today.
It's possible. Yes. We're seeing a lot of shelving in Clone Wars in the Star Wars universe, I've noticed.
They really love space, IKEA.
I guess so.
I just imagine, like, Grievous and Obi-Wan, like, fighting over the same shelf. This one's 50% off. It's mine. It's mine, Obi-Wan. No.
I just see Grievous with the instructions laid out, trying to put it together.
Holding, like, two poles with two of his hands, and, like, the other one holding, like, the instructions.
Yeah.
Space IKEA. Oh, man. And the Emperor's in the... Like, Dooku's in the background, just with an immaculate shelf, and, like, Grievous is lopsided.
There was some nice music in this one. In the first part, there was a nice little variation on, like... I don't know what the name of the I always associate it with the droid theme that, like, the first time you really hear it is when the droids are first getting unpacked on Naboo, you know, for the big battle at the end. It's this very martial, sort of marchy music. And they did, like, a variation of it in the Clone Wars music. It was really nice.
Kevin Kiner's just been killing it with the music, and he's still killing it in Rebels.
Yeah, it's getting better and better in Rebels, actually. And my only other note in this is Space Mengele. That's what that guy was, sort of like the Dr. Mengele of space. He's straight out of a 40s cartoon, like Superman cartoon, is the evil Nazi. He's even got a German accent, you know.
Oh, are you talking Vindi?
Yeah.
He's Act 2.
He didn't show up in this one? He show up in part one?
No.
Oh, I'm sorry. I got him in my part one notes.
How dare
you? I'm screwing everything up.
That's okay. I'm actually looking at my Act 2 notes, and I'm wondering if I made it too long. Anyway. Well, how about let's go ahead and go back to them.
Oh, okay.
Because I actually really don't have a lot for this episode. More of my stuff comes in the second episode next week, so. So, ready?
I am ready.
Act 2. Padme and Jar Jar are now equipped with biohazard suits. Arriving at Peppy's farm, Peppy attacks them, ripping off Jar Jar's helmet. They say that they're looking for the source of the virus, and Peppy tells them it's not in the air, but in the water. Padme will send soldiers to come get Peppy and take her back to the city. Padme and Jar Jar arrive in the eastern swamps. They don't realize they're being spied on by Dr. Nuvo Vindi. Jar Jar trips and finds a hatch buried in the ground. Padme calls Captain Typho, realizing the base is underground. Suddenly, they're surrounded by battle droids. They're captured by Vindi, who says that the Separatists are funding him to create life. What he's making is the Blue Shadow Virus, thought to be eradicated generations ago. Before it needed a water supply to be deadly, but he altered it to be airborne. He wants to release it on Naboo so it spreads across the galaxy, killing everyone. He combines it with bombs to make it more potent. Anakin, Obi-Wan, and Ahsoka arrive, and Anakin has no time for pleasantries. He wants his wife, I mean his friend, last known location, right now. Peppy says that they were heading towards the eastern swamps to look for a secret lab. Anakin sends Ahsoka to look for Padme. He demands Typho to tell him why he didn't send soldiers to look for Padme. Typho didn't want to risk it because of the latest development. Typho has analyzed captured battle droids to get a hologram of Vindi talking about the Blue Shadow Virus to wipe out Naboo. He wants to send one bomb to each key star system to activate the virus. If activated, they'll be facing a galaxy-wide plague, and the war would be the least of their worries. Luckily, Padme has called ahead to her location. Obi-Wan wants to deactivate the lab, but Anakin doesn't want to risk Padme getting killed. They don't have any other option if they need to stop the bombs. If they accidentally destroy just one bomb, Obi-Wan believes it's better to have one planet infected opposed to the entire galaxy. Waiting for word, Anakin is on edge while Obi-Wan is pretty chill. Ahsoka calls that they found the base and they want her to wait while Rex and his men are sent to join her. And Obi-Wan tells Anakin that Padme may be lost, but Anakin shouldn't risk the mission to try and save her. I'm going to move this last part down to Act 3. Bam! Okay. So what'd you think of Act 2?
It was this was the slow part of the story for sure. It was sort of the let's exposition, move along, find the lab, and stuff. But yeah, we do get to meet Dr. Space Mengele, and he is an awesome caricature. He's got the big bald head. He's got the German accent. He's got the lab coat. He's out of his mind, and babbling and happy. Giggling and laughing about destroying everything. It's perfect.
That actually is a much better description, because I said he was like a crazy Frankenstein character, but he doesn't have the moral compass that Victor Frankenstein has. At least with Frankenstein, he's trying to create life, and Vindi wants to destroy it, but he also sees that disease, that war is the disease. But I think you nailed it more, that he's more like Space Mengele.
He's right out of, I believe, the one that I'm picturing, there's a 40s Superman cartoon with an evil doctor that makes robots that Superman fights. And he's basic, this guy might just be like a sort of elongated version of him. Or, like Dr. Savannah from Shazam comics, from Captain Marvel comics. He's got the glasses, everything. He's just got every check off every, stereotype of the mad doctor, from a certain time period back. And he's got it. Except he's a space version, so he's an off white blue color.
I like how he called the droids my soulless automaton friends. I always like characters that are like this character type, because I love Victor Frankenstein and everything like that. It's just, I like these character types.
Yeah.
I also find it interesting that he called the superior life forms a disease that they're spreading through war. So he knows that he's going to die too, so he wants to literally destroy everything, including himself.
Sure, why not?
But I also, in that case, wondered why he wore a biohazard suit then in that case.
Well, because he probably wants his big... He doesn't want to die until he's seen probably a couple worlds go down. You know, he probably wants his big moment where he takes his hat, you know, his helmet off at the end and...
Yes, it was me! Yes!
Yep.
We're all going to die!
I'm sure he's got some sort of whole scenario about how it's supposed to play out.
I was waiting for Obi-Wan to be like, this man is cray-cray. Anakin would just be angry, but I was waiting for some, like, sort of sassy thing from Obi-Wan. Obi-Wan, your lack of sass disappointed me this episode.
Yeah, he didn't really have much to sass to. He got to... Not really sass Anakin, but at least, you know, be like, hey, why are you getting uptight there, Sporto?
I do like that side of Obi-Wan, because we usually do see him, like, so chill, like, usually sassy and stuff like that. But I kind of like the fact that we saw that he was just as worried as Anakin. He was just better at hiding
Because
he needed to be calm. He needed to be able to think clearly up for this. So I really liked seeing that kind of different side of Anakin. I think that was a nice Obi-Wan, because I think that was a nice teaching moment for Anakin too.
Well, I'm sure the whole thing that it was that his wife is there and it's taking place on Naboo, somewhere where he, you know, formative experience in his life. He's probably a little uptight about it. You know, he's probably like, I'm not a big fan of this place.
But I mean, but that's what Obi-Wan says too. I mean, like he says. You know, I understand that this place is important to you, but we need to be leaders and be chill. And he even says, I'm just as worried about all this as you are. Mm-hmm. You have to be able to, like, chill and hide it. I mean, it's just more of a Jedi moment to me.
Jedi moment.
But we know that Anakin loved the best character at Jedi moments, so. Can we also say hooray that Jar Jar finally gets his ass kicked?
Yes.
When Peppy just starts tearing into him, I was just like, yes, yes, kill the Infidel. Oh, man, Peppy is so cool. I really like her.
Yeah, I like your design. And I like the name Pepe, too.
Yeah, because she is Peppy. She's really Peppy. She has a lot of pep in her. And I like that she is, like, super brave and she wants to fight with them too. I mean, like, she constantly throughout the episode, she's like, oh, let me go with you. And they're like, no, Peppy, stay here. Let me go with you. No, Peppy's going to be dangerous. Like, this is her planet, too, and she wants to protect it. And I think that's what's best, like, where Jar Jar is fainting and, like, flailing around, like, she's ready to fight to defend her planet.
Right.
And so that's what I really like about her. She was the MVP of the episode. So, anyway. Did you have anything else for Act 2?
I think I'm ready to move on to the...
Damn, this is going to be a short little episode.
Maybe. Sorry. Maybe not. We padded it all in the beginning.
That's true. I don't know, like I said, like I have more for the
second. There, all sorts of stuff.
I think, like, if we had done both episodes together, it'd be a little bit more meaty. Because, like, this is just, I feel like, a setup for the second half.
Yes, it is. So yeah, for sure.
It's all set up. And we've seen with setup episodes that the first half is usually much shorter than... And then we have a shit ton to talk about next week, so...
Yeah.
We're all going to die! Alright, Act 3. Ahsoka sets off a bomb to cause a distraction as Anakin, Rex, and Obi-Wan infiltrate the other two hatches. A fight breaks out as Anakin searches for Padme and Obi-Wan goes after the bombs. Anakin finds Padme, but Vindi tortures her and Jar Jar to make the Jedi disarm himself and his clone troopers. Vindi gives Anakin a choice. He can either save Padme or go after Vindi, who's taking the Blue Shadow virus vials with him. Ahsoka and Rex are in the weeds, but Obi-Wan drops the ceilings on the droids to rescue them. Anakin chooses to save Padme as his clone troopers rip the droids' heads off with their bare hands, which is so cool. Obi-Wan is going to go after the bombs while Ahsoka and Rex deal with the battle droids. Obi-Wan finds the bomb rooms first, and they all look inactive. Until he speaks too soon as Vindi activates all the bombs. He sets his men on deactivating, like, 100 of them. By the way, I'm very impressed that the clone troopers had, like, that fast.
I mean, the only way I think it really would have worked in time is if they had to do is push a button to do... But they're sitting down and like, okay. Bip, 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 and there's just rows and rows of them all lit up.
It's like 300 bombs, and they're like, okay, let's do this one at a time.
Look at this, yeah, okay.
Yeah, I like how, like,
red wire or yellow wire
ran out of the room, and they are just, like, on bomb two, but, like, literally 5 minutes later, they have 300 of them done. Mm-hmm. So they barely did that really fast. Anyway, Obi-Wan realizes that one of the bombs is missing. Vindi had given one of his assistant droids a bomb who was hiding now. Padme and Ahsoka set out to find the missing droid while Anakin goes after the Doctor. He finds Vindi in a hangar, but the Doctor throws a vial at him. Anakin catches it before it shatters, but Vindi closes the blast doors. Obi-Wan races to meet up with Anakin to help. Padme and Jar Jar find the droid and get the bomb from it. Ahsoka sends the bomb squad to her. Obi-Wan and Anakin corner Vindi, but once again the vial-throwing happy Doctor distracts Obi-Wan. Vindi's hangar rises to the ground. He threatens Anakin with the last vial, but Peppy freaking takes him out. Vindi shouts, "Yes, the bombs are going to go off and we're all going to die!" But nothing happens as the bomb squad deactivates the final bomb. Obi-Wan joins Anakin on the surface to put Vindi under arrest. I must note that Ahsoka, Jar Jar, Padme, Rex, and the platoon of clone troopers are still underground to be a plot point for the next episode. The end.
Just waiting around for that next episode.
Vindi is one crazy mofo.
Yeah, he is.
He's so crazy. I love him.
I just love the visual of the hangar platform rising, though. That was just a really neat-looking scene.
Mm-hmm.
He and Anakin having their face-off on the rising platform, and he's just sort of hanging out as the platform rises, shooting down at the clones.
Yeah, and I like the fact that he keeps just throwing vials, and they're just like, oh, God! don't, no, God! He throws one, and they have to jump off the platform to catch it, and then have to climb back up the platform, and then jump off the platform to catch it. They just keep going back and forth. I'm very tempted to have, like, Obi-Wan just be like, you know what? Throws it at him and just pegs him right in the face. Just bam!
Well, that's I'm saying, if he really wanted to be effective, all he had to do is smash one at his own feet, because he had his face mask on, so...
I get kind of in a way the Blue Shadow virus is kind of like his babies, so he wants to save them for more... He wants to save them for bigger things than just the Jedi.
Yeah.
So, but Peppy saves the day! Peppy saves the day!
She did!
Okay, woo-hoo! Yay!
Sorry, I wish I could... If I could do a stadium whistle, I'd do one, but I...
Well, I was excited about it, Chris. Oh, man. So, I mean, I pretty much have that this was just a really fast-paced third act, just full of tons of action.
The battles were great in it. The way they set up the battles visually, it was all just really fun battles.
I like how they just kept running into each other.
Yeah, and they did a lot of, once again, a lot of great color stuff where, like, you know, they're outside and it's all like at night and it's all blue and misty, and then when they go through the hatch into the underground base, it's all orange. It's just very nice colors and you know, color schemes throughout it. I really like that. Man, Anakin is just way too obvious about his wife, though.
Yeah, I had a note for that in Act 2, and we've talked about it before, but yeah, like, he is just... It makes me wonder how dumb Obi-Wan is.
Right, I mean, even if Obi-Wan's not picking up that, like, oh, hey, something's going on with these two, you know, I mean, it's still an attachment issue that he has working there, and it's like...
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, you can only pass so much off as their childhood friends, you know?
Yeah, and, like, the reason I kind of fall Obi-Wan on this one is because he has had romantic things. He was with Satine. He loves Satine, and he even says he would have left the Jedi Order to be with Satine. So I'm just like, Obi-Wan, wake up! You know what it's like to be in a relationship, and you know what that feels like, and how can you not see this?
Or maybe he does, and he's just overlooking it. It might be a little of his Qui-Gon training of just like, yeah, screw it. What the Jedi I don't know won't hurt him.
I don't know. I mean, there's a serious chance where... Okay, I can understand if it was like an everyday thing. Like, if he just happened to, like, turn a corner and see Anakin and Padme secretly together. And he's just like, okay, let's go the other way. But this is, like, literally putting a galaxy in danger.
Yes.
So, So this is where I feel like Obi-Wan should step up and be like, yeah, put your stuff aside. Let's go save the freaking galaxy,
yeah,
man.
Yeah.
Come on. Come on, man. We gotta go save the galaxy.
Put the little guy away and get your lightsaber. Put your little light.
Your little
stop thinking with your little lightsaber and start thinking with your real lightsaber.
My Schwartz is bigger than your Schwartz. But yeah, I mean, like, it makes me fall to Obi-Wan a lot. I mean, it's one thing if, like, Ahsoka looked over and saw them. Like, she hasn't been there a long time. And you actually find out later, I think it's in what would have been the Bad Batch episode. I feel like I saw an interview that by the time we reached the Bad Batch episode in what would have been the end of season 6, Rex knows that Anakin is married.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't know when he finds out. We don't know that, but he knows that Anakin is married. So, oh, I would love to see that scene. To know, like, him figuring it out or just asking about it or Anakin telling him. I don't know. I would have loved that scene.
I would have pictured it with like, you know, Rex seeing them talking or something and just picking it and going like, so, what is it with you two? Oh, we're just friends. Right.
I think it would actually make more sense if Rex figured it out first, because, like, the Jedi, you know, they have their no-attachment things, and they know that Anakin struggles with attachment and that they're childhood friends and stuff like that. He gets that. Rex is a space marine, and we see, like, the clones, like, flirt with ladies in 79.
Well, it's weird, like, because
that.
He's a 10-year-old space marine that's been... I assume not exposed to ladies, really. I don't know, maybe I had to read some EU novels to see if the clones, like, go to clone brothel, you know, to brothels and stuff on their shore leave and stuff like that. I don't know if that's part of.
Well, in a season six arc, we see a clone bar called 79s, and there's ladies in the clone bar.
Okay.
And so it's like a clone cantina, a clone Tina, as you
Tina.
Have called it. You have called that.
That sounds like an obscure, like, musical instrument that you use to make some sort of ethnic folk music.
Yeah.
And we have Sergei Glugoslav, the master of the clone Tina.
Yeah, so, like, I think that I'm pretty sure a lot of the clones probably canoodled the moment they were off Kamino, and they were just like, yeah, let's get our kicks on. Maybe it was Kix, because there is a clone named Kix.
Yeah,
but I
imagine clone puberty, since they're grown up so fast, is
especially
intense. Yeah, it's not quite as intense as, like, Spock in Star Trek III when they regrow him in a few hours, but yeah, clone puberty's got to be rough.
That's got to be, like, a rough 6 months right there. But, like, so to me, I could actually see Rex figuring out before the Jedi, just because I'm sure he's... Because he does not have to care about attachment. He probably just watches people a lot. I love the idea of Rex being a people watcher, just to be like, okay, how do I learn how to function on this planet?
Yeah.
So it makes a lot of sense to me that he figures it out. But I don't know. I feel like we need next week. Short episode. Setup episode.
It's just a setup episode of Jay Guys and Jedis. The main attraction comes next week.
Yeah. I don't know. I kind of sometimes wonder... that when they do two-parters like this, if we should do them together. But then we would have long episodes.
Hey, if we do that, maybe we'll only be doing this for, like, 3 years instead of 4 years.
I know. Great. So, what do you think of the episode, Chris?
I liked it a lot. It was fun. It had a lot of new stuff in it and fun stuff in it. I was going to give it an 8. Then I realized Jar Jar was in it, so I docked it down to a 7. But then I realized that Jar Jar gets electronically tased and tortured in this one, and and I bumped it back up to an 8.
Remember a few episodes when you convinced me that Jar Jar Binks was an actual good character? What happened to that?
Huh? He was a good character in the context of that episode. That episode was made...
So it's not an ongoing thing that you believe.
It's not an ongoing, like, woo, here's Jar Jar back. As a matter of fact, most of the time I don't want to see Jar Jar back. That show was kind of a switch up, because it was like, oh, Jar Jar's back. And then it was like, oh, this is fun. they're using Jar Jar to his advantage. And so it was a sort of example of, like, here is what Jar Jar's use in... Clone Wars is, and they sort of use him like that again, but it's not the same. They're using him like he was in episode 1, is just like, we'll bring Jar Jar along and he'll knock stuff over and eat bugs.
Yeah.
He's a booger-eating geek.
He's like Screech.
He's Screech
from Saved by the Bell. Oh my god!
You are exactly right.
Oh, he's not as cool to be like all the cool kids put up with him, and he's gonna turn into like a stab happy
bat child actor who grows up. Yeah, that shows up on morning AM DJ shows like Snotty and the dog or something like that.
Yeah, that no one really cares about anymore because that was the only big thing he ever did in his life.
Yeah. Comes on and they go, "Hey everybody, it's Screech!" And they play the Save for the Bell theme, and a little bit of his soul, what's left of his soul, just dies right on the spot.
Oh, now I actually kind of feel bad for Jar Jar a little bit.
No wonder he's stabbing people.
Just a little bit. Not really, but just a touch. Jar Jar, don't turn into Screech. It'd be fine. That's what turns him into Darth Jar Jar.
But yeah, it's a solid 8. This was a fun. The battles in it and the underground base were awesome. I love underground mad scientist bases. I want one of my own.
You want a mad scientist underground?
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Oh god, I can totally see you with one, man.
I would live in it. Yeah.
Have you ever seen the movie Blast from the Past?
No.
It has Brendan Fraser in it, and I think, oh, what's his name? Oh my god, what's his name? Christopher Walken.
Oh.
It's about a guy whose parents in the 50s built an underground bunker because it was during the Cold War and everything. Mm-hmm. They seriously thought that something was happening. Mm-hmm. And so the dad has like a crazy like panic thing, and like it's the bunker is just like their house and everything. But what ended up happening is when they were under there, a plane accidentally crashes in their house, but they thought it was like a nuclear bomb had dropped. So they stayed under there for like 30 years until the radiation would be gone, and they're running out of supplies. And so Brendan Fraser's character, all he knows is what's under the bunker.
Right.
So he has to, when he emerges to get supplies, he's like seeing the sky for the first time, seeing water for the first time, and he never understood baseball until he actually saw it. And it's a really fun little movie. It's a rom-com. I can't remember who the girl is, though. I know Drew Barrymore keeps coming to my mind, but I don't think it's Drew Barrymore.
Yeah, I want Gene Hackman's Lex Luthor base in the original Superman movie, like a part of an old building with columns filled with, you know, a library building under the subway.
Yeah. I'm sorry. I gotta see
this. I'd be down there with my vials of blue waffle virus.
Oh, Alicia Silverstone.
Okay.
So she's the other person. Anyway, I like this episode, but I do think it works better in the two-parter. With the second episode, it makes it more whole. But I do love the stakes in this episode because it's literally the galaxy at risk as much as the galaxy is at risk as much as like the bigger war and everything like that. Padme and Anakin are not subtle at all, and we get some good Obi-Wan sass, but Jar Jar is not needed in the episode. But Peppy is the MVP! And I wish we got more of her always. Like, why can't we just leave Jar Jar on Naboo and bring Peppy with us? Like, she'd be so cool. So I gave the episode a 15.5 out of 20 because Jar Jar docks a ton of points. Right. Like, if he was in the episode, it would be a much higher
rating. 7.25. It's a rare one where I've rated it higher than you have.
Yeah, I mean, if we were rating both episodes together as a whole, it would have a much better, higher score, but this was just a standalone, and it's a setup episode, you know? It doesn't really... It's just a normal, kind of average, run-of-the-mill Star Wars episode, but with the second part, it actually has much more, like, makes more sense in everything.
Yeah.
We'll call that the Vindy call. So, as always, if you want to rate or review us on iTunes, it helps people find the show, and we will read your review on here. And where can people find you, Chris?
You can find me at twotruefreaks.com, where we have all of our nerd podcasts, adding more nerd podcasts all the time. I just added one 2 days ago.
And we had like 50 shows.
Weeks and weeks and weeks, months ago by the time this airs, but there's probably more, but we just added Bots, Bugs, and Babes. And it's a B-movie podcast done by Jason Giaconetti, the newest addition to the Vault of Startling Monster Horror Tales of Terror, and brother of Luke Giaconetti. So he's got his own show now where he's covering B-movies. He's had his And I've been waiting for this for a long time because, you know, I've heard stories of their father, and he's obviously the guy who whetted their appetite for horror movies, and you know, was they were lucky enough to have a dad who showed them R-rated movies at an early age. And I guess that they've already recorded, they're out by now, a couple shows with his dad on it, so that should be great. So we've got two Jack and Eddie brothers and the Jack and Eddie dad all podcasting together. It's becoming a family affair.
It's gonna be so much fun.
Yeah,
I want to send them my favorite B movie of all time, which is The Covenant.
Oh, I'll suggest it to him.
It's about boy witches. They're not even wizards or warlocks. They are boy witches.
He's probably seen it. Them Jack and Eddie boys, I don't know how they've seen so many movies, but they keep up on all the horror movies coming out from, you know, theatrical release to the, you know, direct to video. So
all I gotta say is that The Covenant was my introduction to Sebastian Stan, and I've loved him since then. It's what made me love him from Once Upon a Time to Captain America. It was my introduction to Sebastian Stan. So, yeah.
I couldn't even... I'd have to sit down and seriously think of my list of B-movies that I would want him to cover. It's so vast. But enough about me. Oh, and my awesomeness. Where can we find you, Hope?
Well, you can find me over at What the Fangirl and at geekygirlexperience.com. But one is the website I work for. The other one's my personal website. You can also find both of us, but it's really me, on Twitter at JGuysAndJedi and at HopeMomonX.
Yeah, I'm not taking to the Twitter too well. I'm trying. I go and check it out every once in a while, but...
You should come on. Oh, actually, let me rephrase that. I was about to say you should come on Wednesdays when I'm live tweeting Rebels, but then I realize you're probably behind.
Yes, this Wednesday I will be, and I'm sure it'll be out by now, I will be recording a Led Zeppelin podcast.
What?
Yeah, it's for the long play, our podcast where we talk about an album, you know, an entire album. So we're going to be doing, it'll be myself, Trentus Magnus, and Bob Fisher.
Oh my
covering
God,
Led Zeppelin 3.
That sounds amazing.
It's gonna be amazing. Well, I know, Bob Fisher is a musical encyclopedia. I'm a huge Led Zeppelin fan also, and Led Zeppelin 3 was, I think, the first one I ever listened to. And Trentus Magnus is probably the biggest Led Zeppelin fan of all of us. He's a bootleg listener, so I was a bootleg listener too, but I can't spout off names and dates of shows where he can. And so it's going to be an interesting, fact-filled episode, I'm sure.
That sounds really awesome. And what podcast was that?
Long Play.
Is that one on our network?
Yes.
Oh my God.
We won the Alan Middleton Award of Podcast of the Year for Long Play for 2015.
We have over 50 shows, Chris.
Yeah, yeah.
It's so hard to keep track of everything.
Long Play, I think, is up to episode 17 or 18 now. It's probably about up to 20 by the time this comes out. And the thing about Long Play, Hope, is all you gotta do is find it's a open source podcast on Two True Freaks, which means anybody in Two True Freaks can do a Long Play episode. You just have to you can do it on your own, grab a partner or two, and you talk about the album song by song, and it's got a beginning and end to slap on it. And
want to do that as much as it sounds cool.
Well, if you have a favorite album or something that you'd like to talk about, that's the opportunity.
It's just like I got really terribly bullied in high school for my music taste, and like someone slapped me because my favorite band.
What?
And yeah, I got slapped in high school for liking my favorite band and wearing a band t-shirt, and like I actually have like a lot of anxiety talking about bands that I like.
What?
And I can't wear music shirts anymore just because it makes me really uncomfortable, and I'm always like scared that people are judging me. So like I don't really talk about like my music tastes and
You need to display them even more proudly, and next time punch first, Hope.
No, well, I'm non-violent.
Oh my God, I mean, I've seen strong reactions to band t-shirts, but it's mostly been from adults like not liking their kid's cannibal corpse eaten back to life t-shirt or something like that, because it has boobs and corpses and horrible things on it. But I just can't see what band you would have been listening to, Hope, that would have been so offensive.
I don't know either, because it's like my favorite band of all time, and this might sound like kind of like a little dramatic, but like I might not be here if it wasn't for that band. Because whenever I was like dealing with like anxiety and like depression and wanted to hurt myself, I would listen to their music and it would help me work through my pain.
Listen, my roommate works for a band as a merchandiser, and that band has probably saved thousands of lives. I mean, and I'm saying that, and I'm not saying that just in sort of a theoretical way of like, oh, you know, like, you know, but people write letters and come and, you know, show up at the shows to meet the lead singer guy and say, look, I was going to kill myself and this song stopped me from doing it. So it's a real phenomena.
It really is. Like, I remember reading an article about the band that I liked.
That's why art is great.
Yeah, well, the lead singer was doing it. Well, for one, I've seen them several times in concerts, and I saw him do it a few times now, that if someone falls in the mosh pit and he sees it from stage, he will flat out stop the show completely until that person's okay. Like, he will not continue the show until he knows that person's okay.
Can we say the name of this band?
I don't want to get made fun of.
You don't want to get you what?
I don't want to get made fun of.
Oh, dear God.
No, I don't want, like listeners to make fun of me. But, like, I also read this other article where he saw in the front row a girl had recently had cut herself, so she had bandages on her arms, and he brought her up on stage, and, like, he was, like, hugging her and, like, telling her it was okay and stuff like that, and was, like, told her to never do that to herself again, and they're just everything. And one of their first albums came out when I was in high school, and their next album came out when I was in college. And then their third album, which is my favorite, which was the one I needed the most, happened when we lost our house and I was going to be homeless. And so it helped me like really get through that. And it was pretty much because that album is about like, even if you're the last one standing, you need to do what's right and you need to keep fighting, and it's okay to be different, and it's being an individual and take down Battery City. That was probably your clue right there. You can take down Battery City. You don't need to fall into like the corporate, like everydayness of life. So yeah,
it's not a clue to me, because I'm not up on modern music. It, for all I know, it might be the band that my roommate works for. It sounds very much like the sort of thing that happens at their shows too.
No, I'll give you another hint. Like the lead singer was a sequential artist. And he was going to school for sequential art, and so it was when he saw the 9/11 attack, which inspired him to write music. And then after that, he, ever since they broke up, because they're broken up now, he's now producing comics, and he's done a Spider-Man comic, he's done two original comics, and then he did a comic based on one of their albums that takes place 5 years after the events of the album, so.
All right, listeners, you have a mystery to solve. And yeah. If I catch any of you making fun of Hope,
I mean, I don't, it's one of those things, like, I don't care if people don't like it, because I know that, like, you know, people have their own taste, I don't care, just don't make fun of me for it. That's why I can't talk about bands. I have difficulty discussing them, because I'm always afraid that, like, people are going to make fun of me. That's one of my very few anxieties, so.
Anyway, long play. Maybe you should listen to it.
Yeah, so go listen to Long Play, because I can't talk about it, but other really cool people can. Yep. So, well, that's it for this episode. I'm sorry we ended on such a down note.
Whatever. There's always next week.
There is always next week. I don't know. I like when we get real. Right. I think I listen to a lot of podcasts, and they just sound kind of like, and this is what happened, and this is what happened, and blah, blah, blah. But they don't actually talk about, like, how it affects them as a person.
Well, you learn a little bit about us every podcast.
Yeah, I mean, I like when people get real on podcasts, so I'm going to get real.
Here's what I'll do. I'll load this last few seconds with positiveness. Yeah.
So until next time, let the be with you. Away.
If you shop at Amazon.com, please consider using the link at twotruefreaks.com to shop there.
If you use this link to go to Amazon and then you shop, Two True Freaks gets a little cut of what you buy, and it doesn't cost you anything extra. So you get to shop as usual and help out the Two True Freaks at the same time.
Visit our website at twotruefreaks.com. Two True Freaks is always spelled TWOTRUEFREAKS.
You can email Two True Freaks directly at twotruefreaks@gmail.com.
Two True Freaks and all of its excellent affiliates are available on iTunes, and you can choose to subscribe to either the entire network if you wish, or pick whichever individual shows you want to follow. We have so many shows to choose from, there's just bound to be one that appeals to your particular fandom. Just search Two True Freaks with an exclamation mark at the end, space, and the number 2.
You can find Two True Freaks on Facebook. Just search for Two True Freaks. If you ever leave your house and you actually have friends, why don't you tell them about Two True Freaks?
If you've enjoyed our show, please, won't you take a moment to rate us on iTunes? That helps others find the show, too.
Thanks for listening.
And join us every Monday for new episodes of
Two True Freaks.
We were finally invited aboard one of these spacecraft, which landed near Ann Arbor, Michigan on October the 24th of 1954. This is a drawing of the craft. As I was leaving the craft, the commander, Soltek, said, "Soon others of your people will be able to have an experience similar to this."